How We Made Your Mother is a rewatch podcast that looks back episode by episode at the hit TV show How I Met Your Mother. It's hosted by me, Josh Radner, along with series co-creator Craig Thomas.
In seasons 1 and 2, we were joined by Neil Patrick Harris, Kobe Smulders, Brian Cranston, Ashley Williams, Wayne Brady, Jenna Fisher and Angela Kinsey, Joe Manganiello, and my brilliant co-creator Carter Bays. And now we are diving into season 3.
So whether it's your 50th rewatch or your first time through, follow How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
At 855-212-4CBS, this is where you get to ask Brian Jones, the college football expert we have here on staff, anything you want in the world of college football. And boy, is there plenty to talk about. Coaching searches, college football playoff, Dr. Pepper chest pass, all that stuff is out there for you. Let's start where Brian is right now, and that is Florida, and talk to Alex, who's first up on CBS Sports Radio. Good morning, Alex.
Hey, good morning. Hey, guys, how are you?
Great, Alex. Great. What's up?
Hey, you know, I'm all about the U, love the U, and Brian, I wanted to ask you. Look, I'm satisfied. Mark Richt is a great man, great coach. He's had one recruiting class, second one coming up, and I'm satisfied with the progress we made this year. What are your thoughts about the U? My friends are down on Malik Rozier, but you know what? Malik took us as far as he could. Perhaps he's not the quarterback of the future, but can you give me your thoughts, Brian?
Well, I like the confidence in the young man. And is he a finished product? Far from it. But this is a young football team. His first year at the helm as a quarterback. We'll see if he is going to remain the starter. But there's a lot to like about the young man. He does have that dual threat ability. He's just been a 50% passer this year, and we need to see him grow. We watched Lamar Jackson, last year's Heisman Trophy winner, grow as a passer. You need to see that same development and progression for Malik Rozier. But this is a very young football team, and then they came out, and I didn't think they would be in the hunt for a college football playoff position, but they were. They put themselves in that position, played outstanding for the most part. They got by some games by the skin of their teeth. You saw them play some close ones. UNC comes to mind. Of course, they lose there on the road at Pitt. But there is a lot to be excited about, and hopefully folks will show up to the Orange Bowl and watch them play. I think they're playing Wisconsin in the Orange Bowl. So hopefully they'll pack the Hard Rock Stadium and support this football team. Mark Richt has them on the right path, and we'll see how Malik Rozier progresses as he gets another bowl game. He gets a bowl game under his belt, and also he gets another spring under his belt as the starter.
Zach is in Alabama next up on CBS Sports Radio. What's up, Zach?
Hey, guys. What's up?
What's going on, man? What do you got for us today?
I was just wondering if you felt like the choice between Alabama and Ohio State was actually as close as everyone says it was. If you actually think that Alabama was the favorite or Ohio State was the favorite. I just want to get your thoughts on that.
I don't think it was that close. As I said earlier, I thought Ohio State, they had to really boat race Wisconsin. They didn't do that. Yeah, they missed some shots, overthrew some receivers that were open that would have made the margin of victory that much more impressive. But if Wisconsin had a quarterback that could just execute a little swing pass, they had a chance of winning that ball game. And, yeah, J.T. Barrett made a fabulous play, fourth down. They're in the red zone, and somehow, some way, he gets away from Rip Van Ginkle. I forget the young man's first name, but he scored that first touchdown for Wisconsin with the pick six and then caused a fumble down there as well. That's why I'm calling him Rip Van Ginkle. But if they had really put done a number on Wisconsin, maybe it would have been closer. But I think it was going to be Alabama. Once that game started and you saw Wisconsin wasn't going away and that Ohio State couldn't really put a beat down on them, I thought it was Alabama all the way, so I didn't think it was close.
Yeah, I'm not so sure, having not been in that room, but I thought it was going to take Auburn beating Georgia to boost that Alabama resume to get them in heading into these rankings, and to see that didn't end up making a difference makes me think that it probably wasn't as close as people talked about as well, even though there was still some surprise out there that it ended up being Alabama over Ohio State. And watching that final drive down 6 with Hornibrook at the helm at about midnight Eastern time on Saturday night going into Sunday, as I'm sitting on my couch bleary-eyed, I mean, I don't want to crushed the kid. He won a whole bunch of games this year, had some good moments. But, God, is that frustrating. I mean, it's just so damn frustrating.
He was throwing off his back foot a lot. And I was like, just the mechanics were horrible. Even when he wasn't under the rest. It's like, what is going on here? And I'm sitting there thinking, what's up with the cat from Long Island? Why can't he beat this dude out?
Yeah, I think a lot of people felt the same way. I mean, I know that if you think about it, though, from Paul Chris' perspective, right, the guy, you know, they're winning with him. I mean, you're just sitting there at that, you know, a 12-0 going into this game with this guy. You know, can you make a change in that game? And you're still only down 6 with an opportunity still to win the game on a final drive. But he just looks bad. He just looks like he doesn't give you a shot. And that first pick, the pick to end the game was just awful. But at that point, it was like, whatever. But, you know, that first pick, you know, I believe he was trying to force it into Fumagalli. And it's just like, what are you doing? Like, you can't throw that ball in that spot in a championship game, in an opportunity to go to the college football playoff. How many times have Wisconsin fans probably said the same thing throughout the year? He throws a pick a game.
Yeah, and the defense has been able to help them overcome that.
And to come back on Ohio State. We're talking about how they couldn't come back. And they basically did, and the defense shut down that Ohio State offense for most of the game after the flurry in the first quarter. And then they just couldn't. It was just, to me, and I've gone through it before, watching bad quarterback play for the Vikings or whomever else. Like, to me, there's nothing more frustrating in sports when your team has a shot because your defense is good and you can't move the ball consistently. And every time you get the ball, it's like skipped pass here, overthrown here. Sack there. It's like, oh, just figure out something, and they'd be the best team in the country.
You know what you figure out? You figure out that you don't throw off your back foot all the time. Come on, be a quarterback. You should have learned that day one when you decided that was a position you wanted to play, and that's going to be a position up for grabs, and we'll see if
he comes back. Well, Cone's going to win that job. He'll win that job next year.
He'll win it?
I'm fully confident that he will.
I don't see how I could probably win it at this point.
If Hornibrook comes back next year as a starting quarterback, that's a loyalty thing more than anything else, and because there's just no way. I mean, Jack Cone's got to win that job. I mean, the guy's a big, tall, upright, pro-style pocket quarterback who's going to make all those throws.
And he's a true freshman.
He is right now, year. Currently. Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
Yes, he is.
And he redshirted. Yeah.
Well, he was the backup, though. So I don't know. How does that work? If he didn't get into a game, but he was active as the backup, like if Hornibrook got hurt, it would have been him. Hmm. So does that mean that? I mean, I think because he was active in that spot that he loses his red shirt, does he not?
Right, yeah.
Even though he didn't play?
Yeah, but I would agree. I think he loses it.
Yeah, I think he lost it because he won the backup job, mm-hmm. which showed you how good he was. And I bet you he would have been, if they would have lost a game in that stretch at any point, I think Cone would have ended up being the quarterback. I just think that them being undefeated, not losing, it's like, how can we pull the guy that's won us every game, you know? Yeah. I think that's sort of what it came down to. Anyway, all right. Pat's in Youngstown on CBS Sports Radio. What's up, Pat? Good morning. Pat?
Hey, good morning, guys.
Yeah, what's up, Pat? Yeah, we got you, man.
Hey,
go ahead.
All right. Yeah. Calling from Youngstown, Ohio. Of course, I'm a Buckeyes fan. Of course, I'm disappointed what's going on. But listen, I'm not going to sit here on the line and be one of those rabid Buckeyes fans. Oh, you know, we got snubbed or whatever. I kind of figured giving up 55 points to Iowa was it for us. But what I just don't like, I was wondering if I can get your guys' input. Like, I would almost rather the playoff committee stand there and say, yeah, Ohio State does not deserve to be there because they got crushed in Iowa City. But, or even like, oh, well, last year, you know, they made us look stupid because Clemson blew us out, you know. But they sit there and they're just giving these, like, answers. I guess it's just a politically correct thing. But I don't know. I just was hoping to get you guys' input.
Yeah, listen, Pat, I mean, I think Kirby Hokut basically did say that Iowa was a big deal. And they're not going to bring up last year because that goes against everything they've said before with the whole deal with it's year to year. We don't pay attention to trends and last year's last year, this year's this year. But, I mean, Hokut sat up there and said basically that. I mean, that it's a terrible loss for them.
himself.
Yeah, he essentially did say that, and I think they do look at trends, and I think they do look at last year, and they look at matchups. And you telling me you'd rather see Clemson, Ohio State, or Clemson, Bama? That line for Clemson, Bama is going to be much, much longer, considering how it turned out for Ohio State a year ago. And I understand these are different teams, but which one would have generated more interest? Bama, Clemson, the third installment, or Ohio State and Clemson? You be the judge. I think it's going to be the former. And as far as putting the bow on Jack Cohen, he did play in three ball games.
Oh, he did. Year. He ended up playing. Yeah. All right. So he did get into games. All right, he got into games.
Yeah, played in the second ball game versus Florida Atlantic and then at Indiana and at Minnesota.
All right, so he got into games. All right. So he got into blowout games is basically what he did. So there's no way at all.
Of course that committee's not going to get out there and tell you everything they're thinking. They're going to try to sugarcoat it and do it in a manner that's respectful to Ohio State. But they did lend a lot of credence to that loss, that horrible loss at Iowa. Iowa didn't do anything. They won one more game after defeating Ohio State. And so when you lose that bad by 30-some points. One thing to lose to Oklahoma, and you lose by 15, 16 points in that game, but then to lose to Iowa, a team that has struggled for the majority of the season, that's not going to look good on your resume.
Yeah, it would have been really fascinating to watch if it was just one loss for Ohio State, and they ended up going and winning the Big Ten championship, and then they had to go head-to-head in Alabama that one. Now, you would think that Ohio State would one-loss conference champ would be in there, but
they're in.
I mean,
because it goes back to losing early, and they lost early to Virginia Tech a few years ago, got in, and went on to win the whole thing. And this is the first time, correct me if I'm wrong, but this is the first time a team has lost their last game of the season and gotten in, and that's Alabama.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of those things where if you really want to make a case for eight teams, you can make a case for eight teams. I mean, you really could. I mean, it's this every year you feel like you can. This one, to me, though, the battle for fourth is every year I feel like there's every year this has happened. We've had one of these discussions. So I do like the fact, though, that it's the elite of the elite, and we're parsing it in the way that we are, and we're splitting hairs. But I wouldn't be opposed to more teams getting in, because more opportunity for these teams that are having remarkable seasons to go after a championship, I don't think would be a bad thing for college football. Roderick in Alabama on CBS Sports Radio. Hello, Roderick.
Hey, how's it going? You guys doing all right this early morning?
Yes, sir. How about you?
I'm well, man. I'm doing real well. Just to hear my Crimson Tide got in, I'm ecstatic. I was simply calling because I would think that this would be a good suggestion for trying to decide the Final Four. If instead of going to eight teams, do you think it would be a good idea to do six teams and have the third team play against the sixth team and the fourth team play against the fifth team and let them play their way into the semifinals? And that way you'll leave all the questions on the field.
Brian?
that takes Ohio State out of talking about, well, we could have got in because they would have had to play Clemson. And Alabama would have had to play Wisconsin, or vice versa. I'm sorry.
I'm confused.
Shocking.
You want six teams, so you have all the Power Five conference champions, and then you have an at-large team, right?
Right.
Okay, I'm fine with that. I've been advocating for eight. I would love to have all the Power Five conference champions, and then you have three at large, and that could have been an Alabama, of course, so that now they're in, and a UCF that's sitting there undefeated. You would have them in there, and then maybe USC, USC's already going to
be in. Yeah.
So who would be my eighth team this year? Huh, that's an excellent question.
But no, it's going to be six.
I know you want six in yours. I got you. So, you're in then. If it's a 16 playoff, you made the playoff, and now let's see how well you can navigate that position. Yeah. Even if you're the sixth team to get in.
Well, if it was six, it'd be easy because Alabama would be the at-large team, and then you have the five Power Five champions. If it was seven, all right, so you got those, you'd have those same six in. And so,
someone would get a bye, maybe the number one seed.
Yeah, but then, I'm talking about seven and eight, though. I didn't say that properly. So you want those same six in if you're going to have eight, right? Who would be the other two? Wisconsin in there? Has to be. Come on.
Yeah. I guess Wisconsin. Yeah. Wisconsin would be the other.
And we're missing one now, aren't we? Are we missing?
No, didn't I get up to seven?
Well, we need eight now if we're going to have eight.
Hmm.
Boom, 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 boom. UCF.
UCF is in, right. I said you'd have all five Power Five conferences champions. You'd have Alabama, you'd have UCF, and then Wisconsin. That's
okay.
Eight.
All right. So you're definitely putting in the group of five team in there?
Yes.
Okay.
Definitely. I think they need to be represented.
Hmm. Interesting.
Putting them in.
Boy, that would cause a lot of controversy, though, man.
Why? Because now the ninth team left out is going to be mad.
No. But I'm just saying that if you look at where the committee has put the Power Five, the best of the group of five, rather, and especially this year where UCF couldn't crack 15 for the longest time, and then you're telling me that they get an automatic bid into the playoff, there's going to be Power Five teams that are like, wait a second. Look at our schedule. Look what we've done. Look at our players. You're going to just give this team an automatic bid?
Yeah. Yep. We're just going to give that team an automatic bid. That's right. They're sitting, especially if they're undefeated. Yeah. I'm giving them an automatic bid.
Yeah. Well, it's probably going to stay four for a long time. Right.
Well, they said that when they came out and they announced it. They said for, 12 years, we're going to stand pat at 12. But that hadn't stopped me and others from advocating for them to move the needle on this bad boy and extend it to six or eight players, or six or eight teams.
Coming up next, an Andrew Bogus update, and Rob Gronkowski could be in some big trouble. We're coming right back.
This is Gio and Jones on CBS Sports Radio.
As listeners of the show know, we have an oddball producer. He does weird things, says weird things. He's just an odd guy. Today, his take on his favorite NFL football team, the New York Giants, is one for the ages. So he believes, he knows what's going to happen with Ben McAdoo today because of the weather.
Correct.
All right. So explain this now.
I drive past MetLife Stadium every morning to get to work. It's been a year and a half now. Every morning I can see MetLife. I can see Giant Stadium. The fog was so bad this morning, you could not see the stadium, which is a sign, McAdoo out.
Because of the fog.
The fog, yep.
And this is not some sort of radio bit. He said this to me dead seriously in the break.
It's a sign.
The fog
is gone.
Is a sign.
You believe in signs?
I've never seen fog there. So 18 months I've been driving past the stadium in the morning. Today there is. McAdoo's out.
So it's so obvious. Do you believe in signs in other forms of your life?
Sure, of course. I'm a little superstitious.
Okay, can you give me an example of one of these signs that's worked out?
Cannot. No.
Okay, exactly.
Not off the top of my head.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. Well, how about this? Is this a good sign? Tell me this one, if this is a sign. Brian's the karma expert. You're the sign expert now. The Minnesota Vikings go down to Atlanta, right? They beat the Atlanta Falcons in Atlanta. They do the Jarek McKinnon did the Dirty Bird, right? Like from 1998 with Jamal Anderson.
He's from there. He's from Atlanta. About the Dirty Bird.
Right. 19 years ago was that game where they lost to the Falcons. That happened to be in the Metrodome, not down in Atlanta. 19, Adam Thielen's number. And this year, the Vikings, of course, would be the home team in the Super Bowl. Is that a sign from yesterday?
No, I like the Saints to go to the Super Bowl.
How? Okay. So fog is a sign, but all that. Oh, and by the way, big miss field goal in that game by the Falcons kicker, Matt Bryant. That was a big factor in the ball game. Miss field goal, of course, by Gary Anderson, a legendary one back in that 98 one.
Yep.
Hey, this is a stretch.
That's a stretch.
Fog. That's something you can believe in.
Yeah, we saw this, right, Mikey B? You couldn't see the stadium, right?
Could not.
That's the difference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Speaking of stadiums not being there, do you see they tried to implode the Silver Dome?
How about that?
And it didn't work?
No. Nothing. No bus got in the way or anything this time, like what occurred in Atlanta. He said, nope, we're not going down. You can take our roof,
right?
But the rest of the structure is staying put.
I just don't understand. Like, how bad do you have to be at your job where it's to blow something up? It's not like to blow it up. Just make the thing blow up. And you couldn't do that. And I guess I saw a quote from one of the guys who was a part of this that said, well, it's going to collapse at some point. We just don't know when. Well, that's not good.
Really?
Was it foggy in Detroit yesterday? No fog.
What was that?
Was it foggy in Detroit?
I mean,
so stay out of the area.
Right.
For the time being, we don't know when it's going to fall, but it's going to fall.
Yeah, okay. That's what the guy said. They're probably going to have to do it again, though, I would imagine. But then if you start, like, rigging up the stuff again, it comes down, then you got a big problem.
Yeah.
It's a mess out there.
Yeah, they're going to have to implode some portions of the Georgia Dome as well. We drove by the debris, and certain sections are still upright, and there was a Southwest Airlines banner that was able to survive. So you know they're going to utilize that in some manner in a commercial here soon.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, Bogish is here. He's got double duty today, so I don't want him to wait any longer. What's going on, Bogish?
Greg, let's begin with the breaking college football news we heard right here last hour. The Better Man's Brian Jones reported that Phil Fulmer did not unfollow John Kerry on Twitter and or Instagram, nor did he sabotage the former Tennessee AD. Arizona State officially hiring Herm Edwards as head coach, his first such job since the Chiefs in 2008, and Auburn reportedly giving Gus Malzahn a new 7-year deal worth $49 million after Arkansas pursued him is a word. And, of course, your Final Four in college football is Clemson, Alabama, Oklahoma, Georgia. The semifinals played on New Year's Day. The winners then meet on January 8th. All of these Eagle streaks died in Seattle on Sunday Night Football. 9 straight wins, 5 straight games scoring at least 30, 15 straight scoring at least 20. They're all gone with a 24-10 final, but Philly will be fine, according to QB Carson Wentz, who says his Eagles will be fine.
We'll be fine. This is the guys in this locker room. We're all mature. We all kind of we'll all respond just fine. You know, we're all frustrated about this one, but we're not too worried. I think we'll be just fine.
They'll be fine. Wentz fumbled through the end zone early in the third quarter. Instead of tying the game at 10, the Seahawks went the other way and scored for a 17-3 lead. Russell Wilson, 3 touchdown passes. His team currently holds the top wild card spot in the NFC. The Eagles dropped to 2nd overall, losing a tie with the Vikings, who smothered those Falcons in Atlanta 14-9. The Saints topped the Panthers 31-21. The Patriots smacked the Bills 23-3. The Lions thumped in Baltimore 44-20, and Matthew Stafford injured his throwing hand. And the Chiefs are 1-6 now since that 5-0 start, 38-31 losers at the Jets. Darrell Revis making his KC debut against his former team. He did not leave the sideline after halftime. Todd Bowles asked what he saw from Revis.
I didn't really watch him much, but I talked to him after the game, said hi, exchanged pleasantries, and moved on.
Monday Night Football sends Pittsburgh to Cincinnati. The Yankees, Red Sox, Diamondbacks, Brewers, and Rays among the teams told last night to give up pursuit of Shohei Ohtani. The Babe Ruth of Japan may be leaning towards the Mariners right now. Giancarlo Stanton could be a Cardinal or Giant if he wants. The Marlins said to have the framework of deals in place with both of those teams. Stanton has to waive his no-trade clause. The Spurs did not have LaMarcus Aldridge or Tony Parker. Last night, the Thunder took advantage.
Knocked away, stolen by Adams. Giving to Westbrook. Russell with a step down the lane to the rim. Lays it up and lays it in. Burrowing to the bucket inside of Joshua Levern. Thunder run off 6 in a row and lead by 5, 84-79. Westbrook 19 points.
And that's Matt Pinto on Thunder Radio. OKC held on for a 90-87 win. Westbrook finishing with 22 points, 10 rebounds, and 10 assists. The Warriors handled the Heat in Miami 123-95. The T-Wolves got by the Clippers 112-106. And the Rockets pushed their win streak to 7, 118-95.
Yeah, I wish I could tell you what's going
Lakers.
On. Lakers.
What's going on, man? Is the fog rolling in?
No, it's just that the Petey Meats in there just desperately wants people to go down. Like, that's what he wants more than anything.
Who does he want to go down? Who's he hating on?
He just wants people. Like, the thing that makes him happiest in the world is when people go down.
Yep.
Like, that's what he wants. Oh. And, like, he's just watching TV, like, hoping that people go down.
Who's next? Insatiable hunger for it.
It just made me laugh. It was just funny. Pete, that was just funny.
You're welcome. Glad to be entertaining.
Like the Lauer news turned his day around the other day.
He came in here,
he was all upset, saw that Matt Lauer news, he was bopping, buying people donuts and stuff.
What did Matt Lauer do to him?
Nothing. He just made too much money, I think, is what it came down to. Pete hates that stuff.
I had some insight on that, too, this weekend.
Whoa.
Oh, get out of here.
Talk to a former intern over there at NBC.
Oh, wow.
Jones on the phones.
No, that was Jones face-to-face.
Oh, okay. Jones locked in an office.
No.
Can you share it?
No.
Why not?
No. I'll share it privately. Come on.
But you're not here today, so I don't want to wait.
Well, wait till tomorrow.
I don't want to wait. Tomorrow, I don't care about tomorrow.
Too bad.
Oh, it'd be great if you could share that.
Mm-mm.
All right.
Matt Lauer has enough problems.
You think? Ian Rappaport of the NFL Network, he said that Giants coach Ben McAdoo will walk into work this morning with no regrets about his handling of the Eli Manning situation, believing he made the best decision for the organization. Key members of the team brass as of Sunday were undecided about his future. It was not unanimous. What am I missing here? Because John Mara, the owner, who is involved in the football operations, like everything he's involved with, came out and said it was his idea to start taking a look at the other quarterbacks. He said that. It was his idea.
Yep.
And then they presented this plan that they were all on the same page with because Reese, Mara, and McAdoo talked about it. And they presented that plan to Eli. Eli said no about it. And then they had to come up with a different plan, and now all of it's McAdoo's fault? Like, what? I don't understand this. Now, if you want to get on McAdoo for one thing, it's how horrible he handled the press conference that day. That was awful. But if you're John Mara and you know McAdoo sucks at that stuff and you're not around the day that that happens, I mean, at least prep the guy, talk to him about it. You already know he's terrible at press conferences. It's been shown over the last couple of years, but I just don't understand why all. I mean, McAdoo is a bad head coach that had a terrible year, but I don't understand how this is the thing that finally gets him fired when this was a collective effort by everybody.
And even John Maris came out and said that I was under the impression that the staff had already discussed moving forward with the other quarterbacks to see what we were working with. He came out and said that. So how is this now all pinned on your head coach? He didn't suggest it. The owner suggested it.
It's almost like the Giants are using the bad PR that McAdoo has as a way to just move on right now and, like, cover their own asses. Like the sacrificial lamb. He's the scapegoat right now. Like, they all screwed up, but since everybody hates him, like, let's just fire him now.
We have to go correct the tape, all right?
Like, I'm not saying he deserves to be the head coach. I mean, everybody is falsely acting as if Ben McAdoo was the lone person in this deal to make Eli Manning not the starting quarterback.
As if he wanted to sabotage Eli's career.
Goodness.
No, was not the case.
If you want to be mad at anybody, be mad at John Mara. John Mara hired Ben McAdoo. John Mara brought up the whole deal about seeing the other quarterbacks. That's the guy you should be mad at more than anybody else. I mean, if McAdoo is not a good head coach, whose fault is that? Ben McAdoo or John Mara? I mean, both a little bit, right?
Right. Yeah, both.
I mean, McAdoo probably is trying his best. He just can't do it at that level. Maybe he's just a coordinator. I don't know. But John Mara, it's his job to figure out who the next head coach is.
Right, and there's enough blame to go around, and to pin all this on your head coach is just wrongheaded. And you know, there's some who have an agenda, and they don't care about the facts. It's McAdoo's fault, and that's the story, and we're sticking to it. When the facts would lead you to believe that it wasn't his doing, this was collectively everyone there involved, the general manager, the owner, head coach, and this is the way forward. Go out there and sell it, Ben McAdoo.
Well, it's like a you're not one of us thing is what this is. Like, Gino, you're not one of us. You're a Jet, right? You suck. McAdoo, you're not one of us. You know, how dare you mess around with the guys that made us feel great, like Eli Manning. And it can't possibly be John Mara's fault because we love the Maras. The Maras are the best. The Maras gave us all these great moments. We love the Maras. So let's just now put all the blame on, you know, this guy who looks like a screw up, which I think is part of it. I mean, he wears the PDB tarp yesterday on the sidelines. Yep. He definitely went Pete Cheek yesterday with that.
Disrespecting the tarp.
He wears that thing. He got the hair and the sunglasses. I mean, he looks like someone who should be fired.
All right.
That's basically what it comes down to. He's not helping his cause.
If you're gonna go with the makeover, man, you can't just stop with the hair. I mean, you got to do everything, right?
Yeah, I guess so. You got to do the whole thing. You got to, like, what was that show, Black Swan, they used to do? Remember that show? It was like a reality show where they'd do a full makeover and plastic surgery and everything else. That's what he probably needs to do. My goodness. I don't even like Ben McAdoo, but it's ridiculous to do.
What do you have against Ben McAdoo?
Well, I don't think he's a great head coach. I think he handled these situations pretty poorly. I didn't like the fact that, you know, early on in the season, the fact that he called out Eli. I think he's handled these guys, the defensive guys, pathetically. He's lost that locker room. He doesn't seem like a head coach that can handle New York. So it's not like I feel the need to defend him. It's just that let's get the facts straight here of how this happened.
Right.
It's just like it's just crazy how things just run. Like, this is what the perception is. I'm running with this because that makes me feel better.
Yeah, exactly. Like, don't do it.
You know, enlightenment's a cool thing. If you can ever get there, right? You know,
it's refreshing.
Nobody wants to actually get past exactly what's right in front of their face. This is a broader discussion, but this is how social media and attention spans have ruined us. Because people will just look at the thing that's right there and then go to the next thing. What's the next thing that's right there? And then very rarely are people looking past the thing that's right there in front of them.
And they will avoid things that do not fit with their agenda.
And then find something that does and then use that to support their argument. Just
yep.
Like, man, go back to thinking, huh? We go back to that? All right. Coming up next, Rob Gronkowski turns into a WWE wrestler. We'll come back and talk about that.
Greg Giannotti, Brian Jones on CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
The big story that came out of that game was Rob Gronkowski, who, after this play where Tre'Davious White picks the ball off and he's on the ground, here comes Rob and out of bounds. Here comes Rob Gronkowski, turns around. I mean, we're talking about, what, 3, 4, 5, 6 seconds after this is a play that's been blown dead.
Right.
Comes in with a flying elbow to Tre'Davious White's head. And dude gets a concussion. I mean, that is a flat-out lose-your-mind type moment. Like that, and he said he was frustrated with non-calls or whatever. Like, okay. That's some sort of excuse or explanation for elbowing a dude in the head after
the
whistle was
suplex?
Blown?
What do they call that?
No, it's not. Well, Pete, you're the wrestling expert. It's not a suplex, but it's more like is that sort of like a flying elbow? Would you go with
I would say so.
Yeah, more like a flying elbow he went with.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So, I mean, and trust me, I'm a Gronk guy. I'm a Pats guy. I like them. I'm into them. I'm going to give them benefit of the doubt. Those are my guys. But he needs to be suspended for that.
Well, his explanation was just ludicrous. And they were doing this to me the entire game, and nothing was being called. And what am I supposed to do? Well, you don't do that. I mean, I don't know what you're supposed to do. You just take it like a man and say, I'll get him the next time. You know, they were mugging me down the field, and I couldn't get
free.
What? Like, and so you're going to go and just do give a flying elbow to the dude while he's lying on the turf?
Yeah, it was just shocking to see that replay and be like, what?
I didn't believe it when I first saw it. What is that?
Like, how? I mean, I understand there's emotion in the game, but to see a guy just laying there with the football out of bounds and come flying in that late, I mean, that's just a flat-out lose-your-mind in the moment situation, and I think he should be suspended a game because, you know, stuff like this, it was, and of course he wasn't disciplined within the game as far as getting ejected, so that's why I feel differently about him getting suspended for a game, and not that I need to explain the difference between, you know, guys mugging, as he puts it, Rob Gronkowski on the field during a play, and then that, So, and it was interesting.
It's a huge cheap shot. The guy's not even looking. He's lying there on the ground, and you come and just put all your 270 pounds on top of him out of nowhere. Just unbelievable. I can't believe the Bills fans or our players aren't, you know, weren't jumping on Gronkowski. I've seen a lot. I mean, we're what, a week away from Tlaib and Crabtree going at it, and that was unfamiliar territory for most of it. Now to see this, just outrageous behavior by Gronkowski, and I would be very surprised if he's not suspended for this.
Yeah, and what you didn't see on the camera, because they switched camera angles, is right after that, Gronk shotgunned a beer right on the sidelines. It was like, boom, elbow, and then boom, shotgunned the beer.
You can get away with that. Come on. That's nothing.
Oh, jeez. Well, we'll see.
You do, Gronk. See, that's what you do to deal with your anger over being mugged down the field the whole game, okay? I mean, there was a lot of anger. You had Josh McDaniels and Brady giving him an earful, and yeah. It was great.
I love that stuff. I love
fiery.
That.
Fiery.
I know. And I think it was a blank you, too, to Josh McDaniels at the end there from
too.
Brady. Yeah,
that you're the one calling the plays.
And that's when they were struggling. It was early on. Yeah. And I love that stuff. Reminds me of Bill O'Brien and Brady getting into it a few years back.
Why do you love it?
Oh, just because of the competitive nature of it. It's just as long as it doesn't turn physical, where you start to see some of the stuff we've seen, you know, in the past, or pushing or shoving or whatever. But just the fact that these guys, you know, as good as they've been, and it's early on in this game, that they're that fired up still. With Tom Brady, who's 40 years old, I don't know. And they've worked together for so long, I think it's great. I mean, because you know that it comes from a good place, right?
I mean, right. I'm with you. I don't have a problem with it at all. That happens from time to time. You're going to have moments where you're at each other's, proverbial throats, but there's no contact. Of course, you don't have what you had with Buddy Ryan back in the day on the sideline going after assistant coaches and vice versa. So, no, that's going to happen. And we see it, and you see it a lot from the Seattle Seahawks, but it gets covered in a different manner when it's the Seahawks. When it's Tom Brady and the Patriots, fine, hey, we love it, and I'm not talking about us. I'm just saying, many in the media, when they see Richard Sherman and those guys go at each other, and they're doing the same thing, they're competitive, and they're fiery, it's reported in a different manner than it is when it's Tom Brady.
Yeah, here's why it's different for me, and I understand where you're going, because people, you believe that people are threatened by the Richard Sherman, and the whole angry black guy thing, and I understand
Aaron Andrews report and all that back in the day.
Right, of course. And I agreed with that part of it. But what was different for me with that one was Richard Sherman sitting there yelling at Pete Carroll about plays that they're running on offense. I didn't like that, because that, to me, you're crossing the line when you're going to yell at the head coach about something that's not in your parameters. Like, if he was yelling at the defensive coordinator, like, all right, fine, that's your guy's thing. But when you start to, like, insert yourself into stuff that isn't your business on the field like that, I don't know if that's productive. Saying some of the stuff, too, like about the not running the ball there. That stuff to me is a little more divisive than two guys who are doing the same job that are working together having a disagreement on the sidelines, personally. But just Brady, too, who's like so calm all the time and everything he does, his Twitter or his Instagram account. He was talking about World AIDS Day the other day and how you donate. And he's sitting in his house and he's giving you the whole thing. And he tells you how to eat. And, you got to avoid this and avoid that. And no mushrooms, guys. And,
no nightshades.
No nightshades. And, if you want to get peak performance, this is what you do. I'm Tom Brady. And then he gets on the field. Blank you! Up yours! I think it's
phenomenal.
The
duality of men.
Oh, I love him. Oh, I absolutely love him. He's going to go down as one of my favorite athletes of all time. I wish I had a chance to actually, like, grow up a Pats fan to be like, that guy's my guy. because that would be tremendous.
I mean, you got to be loving what your Vikings are doing. To go on the road, beat Atlanta, I mean, really shut them down. That offense has been high-flying, looked like they'd figured things out. Just leaving Atlanta yesterday, everyone's excited about the Falcons and how they've turned this thing around, and looks like they're on the up and up. And then Minnesota comes in and smacks them down and really shuts down that high-flying offense. And Julio Jones, I think he may have had one or two catches in the ball.
Yeah, Xavier Rhodes, man, shut him down.
Right.
Yeah, no, yeah, of course. I mean, that was an unbelievable win. That was probably the most impressive one. You know, they've had. I know they had the Rams recently, and that's what's great about it, is they're beating some of these good teams in the NFC. I mean, early on in the season, they beat the Saints, of course, but that was a different type of deal for both teams. But recently, beating the Rams in Minnesota, now beating the Falcons down there. They got another tough one this week in Carolina on the road. So, yeah, they've been absolutely incredible. And right now, with the tiebreakers, they're the number one seed in the NFC. They are the number one seed, which is remarkable. And people continue to text me and ask me, you know, are you excited yet? All that stuff. I mean, I've seen them do everything but get to the Super Bowl. So I'm not really going to be interested unless they get to the Super Bowl. That's it. I've seen everything else. And I'm not putting myself in a position to get throttled in an NFC title game. I will not do that. I'm not going to get emotionally invested in something I have zero control over in order to feel like crap if they end up losing in the playoffs. I will not do that to myself. Now, if they end up, you know, going to the Super Bowl, then, yeah, it's a different story because I've never seen that before. And that would be really cool because it's there.
So, so getting to the playoffs, no excitement. Getting to a conference championship game, no excitement.
Nope, they
winning
win
the conference championship game and playing in their home stadium for the Super Bowl,
that would be
excitement.
Yeah, that would be it. Yeah, I mean, okay. I just, you know, I made that conscious decision a few years back to celebrate my own accomplishments, not other people's. So that's the way I feel. I mean, it's been a very, very healthy choice for me.
Yeah.
You know, it really, really has been. Right?
I hear you. Yeah.
So
I'm with you, man.
I mean, I'll feel good just for young me. You know, to have.
How about this? How about we celebrate other people or teams' accomplishments, but we don't get so wrapped up into it where it pains us to the extent that
it's tough to do. It's tough to
do. We want to allow it to pain us to the extent that it once did.
Well, that's the thing, is that you feel really good because you felt the pain. So it's like, and then you're emotionally invested. So it's tough to feel as good without feeling as bad. So, and I should amend that statement. Celebrating the accomplishments of myself and the people that I know and my loved ones and not strangers. That's what it is, because it's not just me. I don't want to sound selfish. There's also other people that I feel good for. But yeah, there's a bunch. I don't know those guys.
All right.
Like Paul Christ, I know.
So Paul Christ, I know.
I was rooting for him. Huh?
You're holding this in, and if the Vikings get the Super Bowl, that's going to be one hell of a, outlet for you to let go?
Probably not, even with that. Oh, I mean, cool. I'll be excited because it'll be kind of a cool thing. But no, I mean, it's over for me. It's been over for a long time.
All right, cool.
But that's just the way it is. I don't know what to say. It was probably one of the healthiest decisions I ever made in my life, was to not care as much.
Man, it was bothering you that much?
Oh, yeah. It really was. Yeah, it really was. All right, Gio and Jones and Brett McMurphy next on CBS Sports Radio.
The podcast Campus Files is back with more stories of scandal, crime, and intrigue on college campuses.
It is not hard to destroy a college.
It's almost like a university under siege.
Listen to and follow Campus Files, available now wherever you get your podcasts.